Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, the Great Backyard Bird Count begins today, something that helps conservation efforts and can be fun, too. But up front, South Central Pennsylvania is in the middle of a weather pattern right now that is bringing us cold temperatures and snow every few days. We humans aren't the only species affected by the weather. Snow geese that normally stop during their northern migration at the Middle Creek Wildlife Management area near Kleinfeldersville on the Lancaster and Lebanon County border are enjoying the warmer temperatures of the south. Not all of them, but soon tens of thousands of snow geese and fewer tundra swans will be at Middle Creek, and it is a sight to be seen. Joining us is Joe Monfort, the Environmental Education and Outreach Coordinator at Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area. Mr. Monfort, so where are all the snow geese right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the snow geese are still overwintering in their winter habitats off the mid-Atlantic coast and coastal estuaries, coastal bays, and they're waiting for the weather patterns to change before they start pushing north. They're going to follow the food and favorable weather conditions. So we don't have a whole lot of geese on the lake yet. We do have some. This morning's count was about 1,000, but as you know, we'll get up into the 100-plus thousands during the peak.
How do you count them?
Yeah, that's also a good question, and I'm going to lift the veil on a very, very accurate scientific method known as estimation. So we will go out, our biologist will go out first thing in the morning, and she'll take a visual sample of maybe 10 to 50 geese, and she'll actually count those and then just look at the square area and estimate based on 10, 20, 30, up to 100, and then 100, 200, 300. So it's a very, very sophisticated, very time-tested technique. But after a while, it gets surprisingly close to the actual numbers.
Well, I don't think anyone is going to hold you to your exact numbers or anything like that.
We don't have the geese count off in the morning.
By the way, if you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So let's get some numbers out of the way. Let me put it this way. The most geese that have been at Middle Creek, when was that? How many?
Yeah, so the highest number we've ever estimated was in 2018, and that was about 200,000 geese on the lake at a single time.
Wow, 200,000. What is it about Middle Creek that there are so many geese that stop over here every year?
Sure. So we're in something called the Atlantic Flyway, and it's the north-south corridor that birds in our area use to migrate. And there are about 900,000 total snow geese. And when they're migrating, you know, they really need to stock up on energy reserves and take some breaks because they're traveling several thousand miles up to the Arctic. So Middle Creek has a couple of things that's great for them. Number one, they've got the lake, which is perfect for the social snow geese to roost at night. But we're also surrounded by a lot of agricultural fields and just a lot of grasslands. And so those geese are eating root shoots, tubers, waste grain. So there's a whole lot of good food and a great place to rest. And so that's why Middle Creek is such a special spot for them.
So many people see the snow geese on the lake. I mean, that, as I said, that is a sight to be seen when you see hundreds of thousands of geese. But the surrounding fields, the places where the snow geese go to feed, I mean, are they, put it this way, does it bother the farmers in the area?
No, I mean, most of the fields are fallow this time of year, and we have arrangements with a lot of the farming community immediately surrounding the lake. So, no, it's not too much of a nuisance. They're just eating the waste grain, so not a big concern.
Mm-hmm. How long do they stay at Middle Creek on average? Any idea? When I say they, maybe I should say individual ones. Yeah.
It really depends on weather conditions. So, you know, right now with the snow and the lake frozen, we don't have a lot on the lake. If they're getting good food reserves and stocking up, they're waiting for the weather north to clear. They're following the food, the some of the earliest shoots during the front part of spring. So it can vary just depending on stocking up on those energy reserves and weather conditions.
By the way, and I want our audience to know this, and it doesn't have to be today. You can look every day if you want to, but there is a live webcam of the lake, a portion of the lake. Now, when you look right now, it's a peaceful scene. You're not seeing a lot of birds. You are seeing an ice-covered lake that has snow on top of it. So, by the way, how often is the angle of that camera changed?
It changes pretty frequently, every couple of minutes or so. Right now, we do have it shut down, power down at night, which disappoints some of our community that want to check things out that are, you know, foxes and otters and things that are out crawling around on the lake at night. But if you tune in first thing in the morning or in the evening, that's typically when the snow geese are taking off or landing for the evening, so you can see a lot of activity then.
Why do you shut it down at night? I'd like to see those foxes too.
Yeah, well, as we get closer to peak, we may keep it open. It's just, it's a solar powered, the live stream, it has a solar power panel on it. And so it's just a function of the energy reserves and keeping it powered at night.
Yeah, from the weather forecast I saw last night, we're not supposed to see sun until a week from Sunday. So that may not help.
Yeah. Yeah, we're expecting the just sort of peak migration to probably be a little bit later than it was last winter, which was a pretty mild winter. There wasn't a lot of snow that the area received. Typical peak can occur anytime from mid-February to mid-March, and we're approaching mid-February now, and we're not expecting it for a few more weeks until the gray weather you noted clears out.
And by the way, I started to talk about the camera. We have a link to the camera, actually the whole webpage for Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area on our website, WITF.org/smarttalk. But it's fun just to watch it anyway. Right now, you're not seeing a lot of activity with the geese, but you are hearing them off in the distance. So you know that they're there. Part of it is because there is so much ice and there is so much snow. Has there been a year where they have not returned to Middle Creek in great numbers?
Well, so Middle Creek's been around since the late 1960s, early 1970s is when what you see as the wildlife management area today was created. The Middle Creek was dammed to create the lake. And we didn't start attracting big numbers until the 1990s. It took a while for the migrating flocks to identify Middle Creek as a good place to stop over. So we didn't start seeing hundreds of thousands of geese until about 1999. Since then, it's been pretty good. There's, you know, it can fluctuate year to year for a variety of reasons, but we've attracted big numbers for the last 20 years or so.
When do they usually peak?
Yeah, so traditional peak might be the end of February through mid-March. That's when you're going to see the first shoots emerging. Most of the winter weather has cleared out. There's snow off the fields. The lake is starting to unfreeze. But as I said, this year with some of the winter weather that we're receiving, it might be a little bit delayed. They have internal biological clocks that are definitely telling them it's about time to get moving, but it's fine-tuned year to year when they actually start the migration based on those years' weather conditions.
Here's an email from Ginger who asks, I've noticed snow geese flying on the east side of the Susquehanna River, but not on the west side where I live. Do the geese only follow one side of the river between Lancaster and York counties?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know the specific answer to that, but it could be very much a function of local climate conditions. So if there's more snow, colder temperatures on one side of the Susquehanna, they might be avoiding that. In fact, with a place like Middle Creek, if they are flying over and see that the lake's frozen, they might try to push on north and see if they can find better conditions. And if they don't, they might even turn around and come back. come back south. So it's not always a point A to point B migration. Sometimes they're cruising around looking for the best spots. And if one side of the Susquehanna has better, more favorable conditions for them than the other, that could explain what you're seeing.
Is there another place north of Middle Creek that the snow geese like to stop on their migration?
Yeah, so we're often among the first stops for the migrating snow geese. So they're starting off the coast of the Mid-Atlantic, the estuaries, the bays. They'll hit Prime Hook National Wildlife Refuge. They'll hit Bombay Hook National Wildlife Refuge down in Delaware. Middle Creek's right there. And then a lot of times their next stop is up in the Finger Lakes District. So they'll alight on some of those lakes and stop and replenish fuel. But over the course of the migration, they'll stop a number of times to feed and rest because it's a pretty grueling journey they're making.
Well, Finger Lakes are a lot of lakes for them to stop at, that's for sure. Here's another question from a listener. We are in the dead of winter, as are areas to the north. Is it surprising the migratory birds are already heading north? When do they start?
Yeah, so like I said, a lot of migratory birds have an internal biological clock that starts ticking, starts letting them know that it's getting towards migration time, but they don't all depart at the same time. So it might occur a little bit like a bell curve where you have the early departers. You know, they think they've determined that it's time to go, but most of them, the bulk of them, are going to leave when the winter weather has mostly cleared out, when those food sources are first starting to emerge, when the ice is off some of the lakes, that sort of thing. They're really waiting for the right conditions to get going, even though those internal clocks are letting them know that, hey, you need to be getting ready.
Karen has a question, and Karen, you're putting me in a, I'm getting depressed just listening to your question here, and I'm joking, of course. What will prey on snow geese while they're at Middle Creek?
Yeah, that's a great question. So younger, sicker snow geese might be predated on by fox, coyote, even things like mink or feral cats, those sorts of things.
And you know, that brings up another
point.
The good
news is that
go ahead.
The populations are very substantial right now.
And it brings up a good point. It is wild. It's Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area. It's not just snow geese and tundra swan. It's wildlife management. What other animals are in the area as well? I mean, you've touched on a few of them.
Sure. Yeah. And that's exactly right. So it's Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area. So we have on our bird checklist over 200 species of birds that have been identified at Middle Creek. Some are residents, some are migratory visitors, and some have just popped up on accident. That happens to birds sometimes. We also have a pretty thriving base of mammals. White-tailed deer, I mentioned otter and fox, raccoons, possums. We don't get black bears at Middle Creek. We're a little bit farther southeast than you might expect to see a black bear. But we do. We get a lot of different birds and mammals at Middle Creek, and it's something that has been recognized, including by the guests that are coming up next. So Middle Creek is one of six globally recognized important bird and biodiversity areas by BirdLife International and Audubon in the state of Pennsylvania. So we're a great base of biodiversity in southeast Pennsylvania.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Joe Monfort, who is the Environmental Education and Outreach Coordinator at Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area, talking mostly about the return of snow geese to Middle Creek, but also the tundra swans and some other animals as well. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WYTF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Joe, I think you just touched on this a little bit, but we had another listener ask, are there other migratory birds who are drawn there because of the geese?
Not because of the geese, but Middle Creek is managed specifically to be good waterfowl habitat. So over the course of a season, our land managers might actually get up and raise and lower the water levels and some of the ponds and impoundments that surround the lake. So we're doing that specifically to create good food sources and the right habitat conditions for different types of waterfowl and migratory birds. So over the course of the season, you might see blue and green winged teal, American black ducks. We of course have plenty of resident and migrating Canada geese. You mentioned the tundra swans. We get the songbirds, tree swallows, and bobolinks that come later in spring. So we've got a lot of different, a pretty broad array of habitat that's managed specifically for a lot of different migratory birds.
Okay, now this may be a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. A lot of times you're viewing when you're at Middle Creek to see the snow geese, the tundra swans, you're at a distance. You can take binoculars, you can zoom in with your camera, and there are other ways to zoom in a little bit. But at a distance, how do you tell the difference between a tundra swan and a snow goose?
Sure. Well, the easiest way is that the tundra swans are a good bit bigger. Their wingspans are up to 5 feet, and they also have those long, slender necks that put them literally a bird's head and shoulders and neck above the snow geese. So that's the easiest way.
Even at a distance.
Yeah, even at a distance, they're noticeably bigger.
Okay.
Now, if in fairness, if there is a 200,000 white birds on the lake, I'll admit it can be challenging, but if you can get a couple in your visual field, the size difference is usually fairly noticeable.
Well, I just talked about coming to Middle Creek to view. During the pandemic, what changes are there?
Sure. Well, the most important change for your viewers to know about is that the visitor center at Middle Creek has been and will remain closed for the foreseeable future. That being said, during peak migration this year, we're bringing in extra portable restroom facilities. Those will be available at all the major parking lots at Middle Creek. So in the visitor center parking lot, in the Willow Creek Trail parking lot, at the boat ramp parking lot. The other big change to note is that we won't be doing any guided or in-person educational offerings that we might do in a normal year. We've got a number of different ways that viewers can take part in educational experiences while they come visit Middle Creek during the migration, though. You've already mentioned that we have the live stream webcam that you can tune in, check out, ask questions. That's moderated by a Game Commission educator, myself. And so you can ask questions. We have a Middle Creek Migration Magic story map that's available on the Middle Creek Migration Update webpage. There are virtual guided hikes available on the Middle Creek Migration Update webpage. And then finally, we also have Wildlife on Wi-Fi, which is the Game Commission's nationally award-winning virtual learning platform. And so you can actually schedule a virtual lesson, including focused on the migration and Middle Creek with a Game Commission educator. And we're happy to join by Zoom, Skype, Blackboard, or the thousand other virtual platforms that we have all become comfortable with during this time.
Let's take a quick phone call. Tina is in Wellsville. Tina, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I wondered, the waterfowl, snow geese, at Middle Creek or the surrounding areas to the Chesapeake Bay watershed, the populations we have now, how do they compare to maybe what would have been here before the area was settled, when it was just Native Americans?
Hmm.
Do we have any idea?
Good question, Tina. Thank you.
We sure do. So geese, snow geese in particular, were down to about 2,000 to 3,000 animals in the early 1900s. So they're one of the animals that have benefited from active wildlife management and also some of the changes in the landscape in the east coast of Pennsylvania. So I mentioned that their food sources are agricultural fields, grasslands, they're hitting those waste grains, that sort of thing. And over the past 100 plus years, southeast Pennsylvania and the area has transformed a good bit into agricultural lands, which actually benefits the migrating snow geese because it provides them more food sources. So they're an animal that has benefited from active management and some of the habitat changes that have occurred.
Well, Joe,
because today, as I mentioned earlier,
I was going to say go ahead, finish what you're going to say today.
Well, and I was going to say, so 2,000 to 3,000 in 1900 versus about 900,000 in the Atlantic flyway population today.
Joe, we're almost out of time for this portion. I want to thank you very much for being on the program. So this weekend may not be ideal to visit Middle Creek if you're looking for huge numbers of snow geese. When do you think the best time will be?
I would say right now, so we play a little bit of a game of telephone with some of the National Wildlife Refuges to the south. We have not heard any updates that the big flocks of geese are getting restless yet. So I would keep an eye on things. We do post regular updates to our Middle Creek Migration Update page, but I'm looking more towards the end of February, first couple of weeks of March is when we're thinking peak might occur this year.
Joe Monfort is the Environmental Education Outreach Coordinator at Middle Creek Wildlife Management Area. Joe, lots of fun. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Thanks for joining us for Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Joe Ulrich, and our program director, Fred Vigent, is with me. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
It is Friday, and wouldn't it be nice to not have to worry about what you're going to do for Valentine's Day while you start your Saturday morning? It would be nice to just already have something taken care of, and we can help you with that here during our Roses fundraising campaign. When you make a contribution to WITF, we will send roses to that someone special. And then you can start your weekend and, you know that those roses are taken care of and that they will be delivered on time. It's super easy. You can go to WITF.org/roses or give us a call at 1-800-233-9483.
Again, that's WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483. Give the unexpected. Maybe it's someone you haven't been able to see or visit during the COVID-19 pandemic. Maybe a teacher, a caregiver, a friend, or a coworker, maybe a veterinarian or a hairstylist. The gift of long stem red or rainbow roses will let someone know that you're thinking of them and that you miss seeing them. And so if you can't say it in person, perhaps you can consider saying it with roses from WITF and Royer's Flowers. You can do that at WITF.org/roses or by calling us at 1-800-233-9483. The donation levels are a half dozen red or rainbow roses for a contribution of $100, a dozen red or rainbow roses for $125, and the two dozen red roses in a vase sets for a contribution of $250, and you can add a 6-inch plush bear to any order for just $10. And not only, Joe, I mean, this is such a great deal because not only are you sending roses to someone in your life, you're also supporting public media, and that is a very important part of this whole campaign as well. We are raising the necessary funds to support Smart Talk, to support 1A Morning Edition programs on the weekends like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and On the Media, Radio Lab, The New Yorker Radio Hour, or Hidden Brain. Whatever program is part of your weekly listening routine, it's being supported with your contribution, your investment this morning at WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483.
That's right. It supports the programming and it's, you know, shows someone that you are thinking about them when you send those roses. And what a great way to kind of liven up someone's day, you know, to have some roses sitting there on the counter. You can walk by and smell the roses, so to speak. It's a great way to just show someone that you're thinking of them. And again, it doesn't have to be a romantic interest. It could be someone, as you said, that you haven't seen in a while. If it's someone because of the pandemic that you haven't seen in a while, who maybe even lives nearby, you could send them some roses and, you know, let them know that you're thinking about them. Maybe you have a son or a daughter who lives across the country or something like that. Roses are great for anyone. Anyone would be happy to receive some roses. And of course, if you want to add that little 6-inch plush bear to any order, you can do that for an additional $10. And again, roses are great for anyone, and they also support the programming here at WITF. There's so much that we are we just couldn't do without your support. That's why we have the Roses fundraising campaign. But it's also a great way to show someone that you're thinking about them during Valentine's Day. And you can send that message of love to someone at WITF.org/roses, or you can give us a call at 1-800-233-9483. Again, a $100 contribution will send a half dozen red or rainbow roses. For $125, we'll send a dozen red or rainbow roses. And for $250 contribution, we'll make that two dozen red roses in a vase. You can do that at WITF.org or 1-800-233-9483. And thanks.
Welcome back to Smart Talk. The Great Backyard Bird Count begins today and runs through Monday. Now, this is an annual event that seeks the public's help to create a snapshot of bird activity in the area. Before I tell you too much more about it, I'll let our guest do that. Keith Russell is Urban Conservation Program Manager, and Kelly McGinley is Network Engagement Manager, both with Audubon, Pennsylvania. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Keith Russell, if you would, explain the Great Backyard Bird Count. What is it?
Well, a Great Backyard Bird Count is what Audubon calls a community science event. And we run a number of these. Someone might be familiar, for example, with the annual Audubon Christmas Bird Count. That's one of the ones that we've run for over 100 years. And we have others like Hummingbirds at Home and Project Climate Watch Now. So these are all events that help us to monitor bird populations throughout North America so that we can better understand where birds are, how many individuals there are, different species, what trends are occurring with these birds. If we don't understand this, we won't be able to manage things to protect our bird populations. And so these are basically monitoring events that are similar to the census that we run, you know, for people. But we run ours every 10 years or so, and the censuses that we do for birds tend to occur much more often. So the Great Backyard Bird Count occurs every year in February over President's Day weekend. It begins the Friday before President's Day, which is today, and it runs until President's Day. So it's 4 days, and you can go out and count birds anywhere in the world and submit the results of your counts to the Great Backyard Bird Count on their website. You can go to a platform called eBird, which is a very popular platform that people use now all over the world to report bird sightings.
All right, Keith, I have to ask, what's that in the background? That noise I hear.
Do you hear something?
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a bird in the house?
No, I don't have anything in the house.
I don't know what that is then. I thought there was a great story there that you had an animal that was making some kind of noise, trying to get on the radio. But no, I don't know where that's coming from. But anyway, it kind of adds to what we're talking about today. We're just going to assume or imagine that it's some type of fowl, okay? So that's what we have. You know, this has already started, you know, New Zealand, where it was Friday yesterday. I was looking and on the website and saw that New Zealand, Australia, got a jump on us because it obviously was Friday morning before it was Friday here. And it provides a good example just looking early on at the running count of birds that have been counted and the species of birds that you're seeing. So, I mean, if you look at the website, it gives you a good idea. So, let me go, Kelly McGinley, how important is this to bird conservation or conservation overall?
Yeah, the Great Backyard Bird Count and community science initiatives, like the ones Keith mentioned, are incredibly important because they really broaden the ability to collect data. By leveraging people all over the world through sometimes very basic protocols, maybe just an inventory, to much more complex protocols, we can really add to the data set. And that data helps researchers and scientists all over the world improve their decisions and inform their decisions about management and conservation efforts, and all to benefit how we look at habitat restoration, habitat management, and bird populations, and protecting them and preserving what we have, and trying to make conditions as good as possible for the continued strength of each species.
I may be jumping around on you here, but you know, we did a show a little while back, and I was just looking this morning to see if this was updated, but that since 1970, that the bird population around the world is down by 417 million since 1970. That's a 20% loss. Do we know why? Do we know why we have lost so many birds? I don't know which one of you wants to take that, but Keith or Kelly?
Well, I'll give it a try. Birds are, you know, they're responding to a lot of different things that people are doing in the world to change the environment in which they live. And of course, one of the things that we're doing is changing the climate. And as the climate changes, the conditions that they have to live in become sometimes better for them, sometimes worse for them. And this can make real problems for birds that, you know, becomes worse for. There are many other things that are going on in the world too that affect birds. Birds are being affected by pesticides that people use in agriculture. And these have had severe effects on certain types of birds. There's a lot of loss of habitat as we continue to develop different parts of the world that birds are using. And when they have less habitat to use, there are fewer of them. And then there are things that we put in their way that are obstacles in the forms of lights and that are on at night, and glass on buildings, which birds often fly into. And these can kill, you know, millions and millions of birds. There are other things too that affect birds, but those are some of the highlights of what's going on in North America. And these things are, some of them are accelerating. So they're very important for us to pay attention to if we're going to be able to keep our wild bird populations intact. And without them, they're sort of the immune system of the outdoors. They consume a lot of harmful insects, and they pollinate plants, and they disperse seeds and do other ecological services that are absolutely essential. So if we don't have birds, we have a lot of problems.
I said worldwide 417 million. Was I wrong? Was that just North America?
I don't remember the exact number of individuals that we've lost, but I know it was between a quarter and a third of all the birds, at least in North America. And I just don't remember the precise number for North America of individuals.
Either way, we're talking millions of birds, and it's an eye-opening and really a shocking number of birds that we've lost in the last 50 years. If you're just tuning in, or if you have decided you'd like to make a call, ask a question, make a comment, give us a call. Keith Russell, Urban Conservation Program Manager, and Kelly McGinley, Network Engagement Manager, both with Audubon, Pennsylvania. The phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Now, we have a question from Lee. And as I said, I was jumping around. I shouldn't have done that on you. But Lee asked, he says, I've never been able to figure out if we are supposed to count the total number of birds or the number of species of birds. Obviously, the birds at my feeder come and go and therefore impossible to count individually. What are the specific ways for an individual to do the count?
That's a great question, and one we've already gotten this morning in one of our live events. Counting the birds in a frame. So if you take, let's say, 15 to 30 minutes to count birds during the Great Backyard Bird Count, or really any time, you want to focus on the birds in a frame. So if you have seen only one northern cardinal, then that's your number. But let's say 10 minutes into your count, you saw three northern cardinals at the same feeder or in the same tree or nearby in your yard or wherever it is that you're counting, then your actual number is three. Later, if you see one more northern cardinal fly through, you don't increase the count to four. That may have been the same bird. So you're still going to stick at three. However many birds you see at the same time is what you're looking for the actual number to put on your checklist.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to quiz you here, Kelly. You mentioned northern cardinal. The top 10 most reported birds last year. What was number one and what were some of the other species?
I'm going to fail the pop quiz.
Oh, come on, Kelly.
Well, the northern cardinal was the top reported species last year in the U.S. Right.
That was a hell of a hint I gave you.
It was the most often. And it's interesting, you were talking about the snow goose earlier at Middle Creek, and that was the bird that was reported in the largest numbers in North America. Quite interesting.
All right, here's
so
some
they
of the...
have increased... hugely in, you know, in terms of their population in the United States. They, as it was said earlier, they didn't used to occur in Pennsylvania very much at all. And the way that we have manipulated the landscape here in Pennsylvania and other places in the Mid-Atlantic region with these big, you know, agricultural spaces that, you know, leave corn all winter has allowed these birds to really increase because they have all this food that they can eat in the winter. And so their population can remain large. They don't have a cull as much in the winter. And they've become actually a problem because there's too many of them now in the Arctic and they're displacing other species and ruining habitat. So it's an interesting outcome of success for that particular species.
All right, so let me go down the top 10 here. Call this the trivia portion of the program. Northern cardinal was number one, dark-eyed junco, mourning dove, downy woodpecker, blue jay, house sparrow, house finch, American crow, black-capped chickadee, and red-bellied woodpecker. Those were the top 10 birds that were counted last year. We'll talk more about the great backyard bird count in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Our guests, Keith Russell, Urban Conservation Program Manager, and Kelly McGinley, Network Engagement Manager, both with Audubon, Pennsylvania. If you have a question or comment about the great backyard bird count, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Let's take a phone call from Mike in York. Mike, you are on Smart Talk.
Well, okay. Good morning, all. I my question isn't very quote unquote sexy, but I get some wonderful mailings from Audubon, and I must have contributed, but I'm not a regular contributor. Why should we support Audubon versus the other environmental groups, Sierra Club, National Resources Defense Council, and others that I'm sure have efforts to, and Nature Conservancy have efforts to try and make sure the birds stay healthy.
Thank you very much for your call. I don't know whether you're in competition with these other groups or not, but maybe a good explanation of what Audubon Pennsylvania does, what your mission is a way to go.
Yeah, so great question. And often, instead of being in competition with those organizations, we often have the good fortune of partnering with them to do more large-scale conservation work that on our own or as a single organization isn't always something that can be accomplished. So partnering together as conservation organizations is truly invaluable. And I'm sure Keith would echo me here. We'd encourage you to figure out which one appeals to you the most. Everybody's doing some really great work, and I'm sure they'd all be incredibly grateful for your contributions. Audubon's mission is to protect birds and the spaces that they need to survive. So protecting habitat and protecting communities, and making sure that our work supports both bird and the place, both birds and people, the places that we share all over the continent.
Yeah, I think that that's a good thing to remember. Birds are our focus at Audubon, and it's not necessarily the sole focus of some of these other organizations that Mike mentioned. And we do this in very specific ways. The Great Backyard Bird Count is something we collaborate with the Cornell University Lab of Ornithology and Birds Canada to produce. We also collaborate with them to do the Christmas Bird Count. And these are really critical ways of gathering data, which help to produce that report about birds and the decline that has occurred with birds over the last 40 years or 50 years. So if you're interested in birds in particular, Audubon should be at the top of your list in terms of organizations to support, because that's our focus and because we really do so much to provide data that drives our conservation efforts here in North America to protect birds.
Hey, Keith, I'm curious, why do you do the bird count in February? I mean, for example, here in Pennsylvania, I actually saw a robin last week, which surprised me. But at this time of the year, with the weather as cold as it is, there are some bird species that we wouldn't see here in Pennsylvania. Now, granted, this is a worldwide thing, but why do it in February?
Well, if you're doing it in February in other parts of the world, for example, in the Southern Hemisphere, it's summer. So it was picked, I think, because it's a good time to get a census in. The Christmas bird counts are done in December and early January. So you can't do a census then. And they could have probably picked a time in the summer or the winter. And I think that the time in February was an open spot. You have a holiday weekend, so it's, you know, amenable to getting people out. And again, we're counting birds here in North America in the winter. We could have done it in the summer, and then the counts in the Southern Hemisphere would have been in their winter. But there are other censuses that provide information about our birds during the summer period. So the one time that we, you know, don't have that much information is in early February. We get early winter data from the Christmas bird count, but this is late winter data. So it sort of fills a void. You have data from the summer, you have data from the early winter, now from the late winter. And we're particularly interested at Audubon in what is going on with climate change. And winter is a really good time to be able to assess how climate change is affecting bird populations.
We have a lot of emails, so I'll try to get to as many questions as I can. Susan from Lebanon has a pair of red shoulder hawks in her backyard right now. She wants to know what to feed them. And Susan, I'm going to ask for you to take a picture of those hawks and send it to smarttalk@witf.org so our listeners can get a look at them as well. But what does she feed them?
They don't need to be fed.
They'll find their own way around, huh?
Yeah, they'll find their own way.
Steve from Mechanicsburg, and we've actually gotten this question from several people, talking about the impact of cats on the bird population. You know, this may not seem like a huge problem to many people, but apparently it is, that cats prey on birds, obviously, and it has a great impact on the bird population, doesn't it?
Yeah, cats are believed to, or estimated to, kill over a billion birds in North America every year. And that's a huge, huge number. If you're a cat lover, that's not something you necessarily are going to be comfortable hearing, but cats are predators, and that's what they do. So if we allow them to roam outside, a lot of cats will wind up killing birds, even when we're not even aware of that. So the more we know about this, I think the better choices we can make about it. but that's what the estimate is, that it's over a billion birds every year.
What can a cat owner do to keep their pet from killing birds? I mean, I know it's their instinct.
The best thing is to not let them roam around outside. Even when they're collared with bells, they learn to get around that impediment and still capture birds. They're so smart. So the only foolproof way is to keep them inside.
Mm. I want to thank you very much. There's so many questions here. We'll have to have you back. And I'm going to be watching to see what the update is throughout the weekend. What is that website again for someone who wants to count birds and report them?
Well, you can go to ebird.org. And if you're not registered, you just register. It's free. And you can put whatever observations you make anywhere in the world into eBird, and it will count for the Great Backyard Bird Count if it's done this weekend.
Keith Russell and Kelly McGinley with Audubon, Pennsylvania, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thanks for joining us for Smart Talk this Friday morning. Good morning, everyone. I'm Fred Vigent, Director of Programming, joined by Joel Ulrich. Hey, Joe.
Good morning.
And we're here with you just for the final few moments of the hour before we get 1A started to ask you to take a moment to consider a contribution for Smart Talk and 1A during our annual Roses campaign. And in doing so, you also have the opportunity to send roses to that someone special in your life, whether it's a half dozen red or rainbow roses for a contribution of $100, a dozen red or rainbow roses for a contribution of $125, or two dozen red roses in a vase for a contribution of $250. Time is running out. Today is the last day up until 2 this afternoon. You can still make a donation and still send roses anywhere across the country, but after 2 o'clock, they can only be sent locally throughout the region. So if you have someone special in your life that's in Utah or California or Maine or Florida, wherever across the country that you would like to send roses, now is the time to make that contribution at WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483.
It's a campaign where you can send roses to someone. And again, as you said, you support the programs here at WITF as well. And if you're thinking about, you know, you're not sold totally yet. You're thinking about, you're hearing this and you're saying, oh, I don't know. Do I want to send some roses? Do I want to, you know, send a contribution? Just think about how often you listen. I know a lot of people tell me that WITF is the only station that's on in their car. And, you know, we are seeing a lot more people using smart speakers. You can just say, play WITF radio around the house, and your smart speaker starts playing WITF. If you find that you are doing that, if you're listening on your smart speaker, if it's the only station that's on in your car, think about how much you listen and think about how important that is to you. And if you can, make a contribution and send some roses, because that is how we continue to do what we do here at WITF, with your support. And the Roses campaign is extra fun because you get to send someone some roses along with that contribution. So it's a great way to support public radio and send a message to someone that you're thinking of them. And that message doesn't have to be, I love you. It could be, I miss you, I care about you, you know, I'm thankful to have you as a friend. Roses really can say a lot of different things, and you can send them to a number of different people. It doesn't just have to be a romantic interest. And you can send those roses at WITF.org/roses or give us a call at 1-800-233-9483. A half dozen red or rainbow roses will send out with a contribution of $100, or rather Royers will send them out. These are beautiful roses coming from Royers. For a contribution of $125, Royers will send a dozen red or rainbow roses. And with a contribution of $250, we'll send out two dozen red roses in a vase. So it's a great way to show someone that you're thinking of them and support public radio.
That's WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483. 9483. There's something very special about the delivery of flowers to anyone. It's about the surprise. It's about the smiles, the happy feeling that a rose's delivery brings. So surprise someone special with the delivery of beautiful roses from Royers and WITF. You'll be supporting Smart Talk and 1A and the programs you'll tune into this weekend, like Planet Money Weekend Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And you'll also be sending some beautiful roses. So a contribution of $100 for a half dozen red or rainbow roses, a contribution of $125 for a dozen red or rainbow roses. Make that contribution right now at WITF.org/roses or 1-800-233-9483. And thanks.